Hello, this is Jonathan Marks via PCJ Online, just about to push the button on another programme from the media network Vintage Radio Archives.
Oh, a microphony!
And a phony at the mic!
Get off! Quiet, numbskulls, I'm broadcasting.
The need to talk is a primary impulse. Since 1927, we've not stopped talking.
What about May 1940?
Shut up. First from Europe, this is the Talk Station, Radio Netherlands.
Indeed it is. Hello, I'm Jonathan Marks, behind the mic with Media Network, our weekly dip into the world of wireless. Just a reminder that this coming Sunday at midnight 30 UTC, we start our new winter transmission schedule. The timing of this programme remains unaffected, except during the European transmission on 5955 kHz next week. We'll be on the radio around 11:50 UTC. We understand from our office in Costa Rica that the free English language programme info newsletter, On Target, which is being sent out from there, has been sent out now in batches. Most of those are in the mail. Remember, our mailing list has grown to about 35,000 for the English version, so there's quite a lot of work involved in its distribution. Last week, the audio and video fair Furato was held at Amsterdam. The consumer electronics industry and the related magazines have all been hit by the recession. 131,000 people came to the exhibition centre over the seven-day period, which was around the same rate as 2 years ago. But for us, this Furato lacked a lot of sparkle. Pete Myers joins me now to review some of the new media-related products.
Well, Jonathan, several European manufacturers, led by Philips, tried to persuade people that they now need a $2,000 television in the new 16:9 aspect ratio. But there are so few films transmitted in the new format that there isn't much you can watch, and the picture quality, in our opinion, is rather poor. The analog high-definition television project, HD Mac, is in trouble, because electronics organizations in the US have already demonstrated purely digital systems. Yes, say the pundits, but the Mac system is ready now. However, television stations around the world are not currently dealing with massive postbags from viewers complaining about the quality of their TV picture. The public can clearly wait until something better does come along that really does look different.
In fact, they're waiting for the sort of dramatic improvement that the public in Europe and North America heard 10 years ago when the compact disc was introduced as a rival to the vinyl record. On the audio front, Sony declared war on Philips, Grundig and Panasonic last week. Sony has a new miniature recordable disc system, which it says will replace the cassette. Philips, on the other hand, is leading the camp that says the future lies in the digital compact cassette, a system which uses a multi-channel static recording head to save recordings in digital form. DCC has reduced performance when compared to the digital audio tape, and that's deliberate. The record companies blocked the DAT development in the home because it can tape compact discs with very little loss in quality. Philips launched DCC at Furato with just one recorder, the DCC 900, a huge box reminiscent of the first CD players, with a massive heatsink on the back, which gets very hot with continuous use. Grundig and Panasonic, two companies in which Philips has shares, also announced the same player, but with a different type number stuck on the front. Philips says DCC went on sale in Japan on September 21st, and sales in Holland, Germany, France and Britain will start in the second half of October. I visited the Philips stand on the last day of the show and listened critically to the machines that had been used, or rather misused, by the public for the previous 6 days. It was obvious on several machines that the tape recordings were now suffering from severe dropout problems.
Sony did public demonstrations of its rival mini-disc system, but that backfired in a spectacular way. In the process of playing back a hit by Mariah Carey, the beautiful girl hired to demonstrate the apparatus pointed out that the unit was shockproof. She then shook the player so hard that the plug connected to the external amplifier came unplugged. But the music kept on playing, proving that the whole demo had been faked. Sony says it will be some months before the mini-disc recorders are in the shops. It's a shame.
On the radio receiver front, though, we did pick up more encouraging news. Grundig is to extend both its satellite and Yacht Boy series at the end of the year. Siemens, who market Sanjian products in Europe, say that a new compact world receiver will be released in January. It's based on the ATS-808 design, but it's smaller and adds extra features like a dual alarm. As well as continuous shortwave coverage, the new radio has an automatic tuning system which scans certain memories and picks the best channel based on signal strength, useful if a broadcaster is using, say, three frequencies at the same time to your part of the world. The new radio will be called the ATS-606 under the Sanjian label, whereas Siemens will call it the RK-659.
Radio Netherlands. Get stuck into a good program instead of glued to the television.
To Brasstown, North Carolina, USA now, where Bob Grove, manager of Grove Enterprises, has announced there'll be a slight delay to the launch of the new SW100 communications receiver. A September delivery was originally projected with a price of $899. Now that date's been put back a bit, but the price appears to have dropped. Bob Grove.
We're making excellent progress on it, slower than we'd like, but it looks as though it's going to be late December before we'll be any quantity production.
And where are you making the receivers?
The radio is going to be made right here in the United States in two different places. The circuit boards will be fabricated and the components put on the boards in the state of Georgia. And then they come up here to North Carolina, where we will actually assemble them right here at Grove Enterprises. So it is 100% American design, conception, and manufacture.
Okay, and for what price?
It'll sell initially for $799 U.S. We also are announcing in the October issue of Monitoring Times a product that no one knew we were even working on, which is a spectrum display unit. This is fully developed at this point and awaiting manufacture. Working with a conventional little video monitor, there's an interface box which you plug into the IF output of a number of receivers, such as the ICOM R7100, R7000, and the Grove SW100, allowing you to see up to 10 megahertz wide of spectrum as a video display.
And how much does that retail for?
Approximately $500 U.S.
So, for a price, you'll be able to monitor a portion of the shortwave dial and watch as stations come up on the air and close down. Now, about 6 months ago, we did a survey of shortwave dealers to find out how things were going in the industry. The recession is still hitting many countries, and people generally have less money to spend on hobbies. It's interesting to note that many shortwave interest booms have coincided with a peak in the sunspot number. So now that solar activity is declining again, has this affected business?
We've gone through a period of high sunspot activity to low sunspot and back up again. And while there's no question that the combination of high sunspot activity and the Gulf War did lead to a tremendous boon in sales, the last 2 months here at Grove Enterprises, we have seen sales higher than we've ever had in the history of our company. So I feel that basically people have become aware, and it's not a question of the Gulf War any more than it's a question of the sunspot cycle. It's a matter of the fact that we are in an information age, and people are now aware of the fantastic ability to acquire information via the radio spectrum.
Bob Grove. And we've heard similar views from several shortwave dealers in both Europe and North America that business has never been better. Interesting to note that several faxes and phone calls came in as a result of the latest transatlantic balloon race towards the end of last week. Phil Perkins in Britain noted 8924 kilohertz as being the most active frequency for communications. On Saturday night, Balloon 5, manned by the American team Tony Bradley and Richard Abruzzo, was clearly audible around 2030 UTC.
We have a layer of clouds that was moving in on us. We were down lower at like 8,700 feet. We went up to see what the clouds were, and they are building. Okay, we'll stand by. This is Chrysler 5.
In the end, the Belgian team won the race, although the American team set a new record for the world's longest flight when they landed in Morocco just after 8.30 UTC on Tuesday morning, after a 146-hour flight from Bangor, Maine, on the eastern seaboard of the United States. Now to the answer line, Hilversum 724222, and a call from a few miles away in Floton.
Hello, Jonathan. This is Julius Hermans. European Christian Radio, the station from Italy, made a slight frequency change. They moved from 6210 to new 6220, of course to avoid QRM from Zagreb on 6210. So that's European Christian Radio on 6220. A nice DX tip, which I got from the Danish shortwave news. You can hear daily the voice of the broadcasters of Eritrea on 7380. I hear them at about 16.30 UTC until sign-off at 1700 with a program in a local language and some nice local music. So that's the voice of the broadcasters of Eritrea on 7380. It's still unclear whether this is a clandestine operation or whether this is a station from a new country because Eritrea declared itself independent a while ago.
Yes, nice music, but I wish I could understand what they were talking about. Steve Witt in England says he's now clearing stocks of his two publications about getting the most out of your Sony ICF 2001D, should you own one. The booklets contain a lot of useful information not in the official manuals, plus details of modifications for those not afraid of a soldering iron. Both booklets are now combined into one package, and that costs £4 in the UK, £5 airmail anywhere else. Payment must be in sterling, payable to Steve Witt, and the address is Hunt's Cottage, Kiln Lane, Buxhall, and that's spelled B-U-X-H-A-L-L, Suffolk, IP14-3DU, in England. The address again, Steve Witt, Hunt's Cottage, Kiln Lane, Buxhall, Suffolk, IP14-3DU in England. And now this.
NOS Radio 1 en 2. Elektronica, computers, ruimtevaart en stereofonie. Dit is NOS Hobbyscope.
I'm afraid we have to report the end of an era with regard to our colleagues on the Dutch domestic service, NOS. You may remember in the early 80s that the program Hobby Scope launched a computer Esperanto called Basic Code, which enabled home computers of different brands to download digital data broadcast over the air. Basic Code has survived into the 90s, but the NOS management has now decided that a new lineup of programs is needed as from the start of October, and specialist programs like Scope, as it's now called, will cease to exist. The last transmission will be on Monday at 20:30 UTC on 1008 and 891 kHz medium wave, and that program will include the last Basic Code transmissions.
De Beeldkrant. Over 3 seconden.
Looking at the new lineup, it seems that popular science programs have completely disappeared from the schedules of public broadcasters in this country, with the exception of Radio Netherlands. Since we're in the niche marketing business, it's a shame to see the trend go towards more music and quizzes, so that domestic public radio here becomes something to have on in the background. The International Committee of the Red Cross is in the headlines these days, what with all the human tragedy in the world. The ICRC has a regular column integrated into the broadcast of Swiss Radio International. But once a month, the ICRC has a series of transmissions under its own flag. This coming Sunday, there'll be another one, starting at 11 hours UTC, broadcast to Europe, in English, on 7210 kHz. There's a repeat this coming Monday at 17 hours UTC, again to Europe, on 7210 kHz. The transmission facilities are donated free of charge by the Swiss PTT.
Radio Netherlands, not national, but international broadcasting direct from Northwest Europe.
Thank you very much.
In It's extremely difficult to set up a new radio station in the United States at the moment. The banks are loath to lend money out. And, as Lou Josephs has been explaining to me, a change in the law is having a profound effect on the broadcast industry. A couple of weeks back, 4,000 people attended the National Association of Broadcasters Radio Programmers meeting in New Orleans. Those like Lou who wandered round the meeting discovered that the radio people had almost deserted the convention. The main discussions were between lawyers and financiers interested in buying up radio stations.
Well, the FCC, in its wit and wisdom, have changed the rules. Now group owners are allowed to own up to two AMs and two FMs in the same market. What that means is, a lot like European networks, we're now beginning to see the beginning of regional networks in the United States. For example, we now have the Boston Radio Group, which consists of radio stations WXKS-FM, WXKS-AM, WBMX-FM, WHDH-AM, and WRKO-AM, all owned by one owner.
And that one owner can control up to 25% of a given audience share in any market. So, rather than having a lot of small stations, many new owners plan to combine resources in the areas of sales and management. And with the increasing use of digital technology, such as digital storage devices linked to a sophisticated timer, it's possible for a handful of on-air presenters to drive several stations at once. So, what will all this mean to the industry as a whole?
Radio, by its very nature in the United States, is a narrow cast medium. What I think it's basically going to mean is that the strong will survive.
In order to stand out from the rest, increasing use is made of what's called direct marketing. First, the radio station needs the names and addresses of its listeners.
If you receive on target, that means you're on Radio Netherlands database. That's how a radio station creates a database. They know who their listeners are, and they're able to send them things from time to time.
But whereas we keep that mailing list purely for our own use, commercial radio stations are happy to sell the data to others. It's common practice. In Holland, for instance, one of the biggest sources of specialized names and addresses is the PTT.
Anytime you make a credit card purchase, anytime you make a purchase in the supermarket, it's scanned. Anytime you make a long-distance telephone call, that information is contained in a file. Anytime you go have a medical test run, that information is contained in a file.
And it's quite amazing how that data is then used by the radio stations to sell advertising time.
There's information available in one project that I've been working on in Houston, for example. I can tell you who listens to this particular radio station right down to the block group they live on.
Do you know a profile about these people? You know,
What kind of television shows they watch. I know what things they consume. I know what kind of car they drive. Say, for example, we were whiz-bang radios, and we had this new super radio that we wanted to sell to shortwave listeners. Well, I could go find a database that would tell me where to find all the shortwave listeners in the United States. And then I could send them a little brochure about my whiz-bang radio and where to buy it.
Talking of whiz-bang radios, one of them was on a show at the NAB. You mentioned super radio. That's what it's called.
Yes, the NAB long-awaited FM-AM stereo AMAX super radio debuted. It's the most expensive piece of garbage I've ever seen.
Really? That's an interesting way of summing it up. How much does it cost?
It costs $499, but Jonathan, that's just the tuner. That doesn't include speakers or an amplifier or a loop antenna.
A loop antenna? That looks like something you might construct yourself?
Yeah, and if you don't feel like constructing it yourself, you can pay Denon $17.99 for one.
The Denon TU680 NAB doesn't have a band switch. As soon as you get to the top end of the medium wave band, it switches to FM automatically. Mind you, there's a noticeable audio quality difference. But wasn't the FCC planning to extend the medium wave band to reduce the interference problems?
Yeah, they're getting ready to do just that. They're going to be soon authorizing stations to operate from 1610 right through to 1710. Things they're looking at are interference with the fisheries beacons that are out there in the Atlantic and in the Gulf of Mexico and in the Pacific Ocean. And they're also taking a look at what kind of other interference might develop in that band before they actually start authorizing stations to be there. It should be another month or so before they finally have the actual applications process all set and ready to go.
But at the moment, nobody's up there. I'm above 1610.
Not yet. There are some experimental stations that show up there from time to time. And as a matter of fact, the digital audio broadcasting demonstration occurred on 1660.
Delegates to the NAB convention heard an interesting experimental digital broadcast from WNOE in New Orleans. On 1060 kHz, the station was audible in AMAX AM stereo as usual. But a 4-watt transmitter on 1660 kHz was also active. On an ordinary radio, the stream of digital data at 126 kilobits per second sounds just like a shh noise. But the test radio was able to get a superb stereo radio signal out of it.
The Acorn in-band DAB system was probably the most ignored aspect of this particular NAB, but the one with the most far-reaching consequences, because AM sounded as good as FM.
So engineers behind the USA Digital Radio Project have succeeded in broadcasting programs in digital form and squeezing that data stream into a 10 kHz bandwidth. Will it work on shortwave? Will it breathe new life into AM? More on that topic next week. Meanwhile, a fax has arrived from Bob German, project manager at the new shortwave station WEWN in Birmingham, Alabama. He reports that their first shortwave transmitter arrived on Monday, and they expect to be testing a month from now with a few antenna tests in 3 weeks' time. More on that when we have it. Now, though, let's find out more about this station. Yes, Radio Australia. For the last couple of years, the parent organisation, the ABC, has been involved in broadcasting projects in Vietnam, Laos and Cambodia, mainly training personnel. Some extra equipment has also been sent in. During the Pol Pot regime, a lot of the radio infrastructure in Cambodia was destroyed and broadcasters murdered. David Hill, Managing Director of the Australian Broadcasting Corporation, dropped by our studios, and Joe Coman, Head of Radio Netherlands Asian Service, took the opportunity to find out more about their future plans.
Well, like Radio Netherlands, the ABC with Radio Australia has been broadcasting into the Asian Pacific region for 50 years. But I think shortwave radio will continue to be a very popular form of media in a lot of Southeast Asia over the next 10 and 20 years. But the reality is television is coming with a vengeance. And it's interesting, right through Asia, the proliferation of satellites that are bringing television. You've had the Indonesians put up a series of Palapa satellites, and they'll continue to put more up. Next year, Thailand puts up the first big Thai satellites called ThaiSat. The Malaysians have plans to put up satellites. You already have the star satellite AsiaSat out of Hong Kong. Now, in Bangkok now, for example, both on the old terrestrial feed and off satellites, you can get 19 or 20 different television stations. And that's going to continue. And what we want to do in Australia and the ABC is to put the ABC television signal that currently is fed by satellite all over Australia through Southeast Asia, and we hope to do that by the end of this year. But in doing so, we won't be the first, because you can currently get, if you've got the right satellite receiving equipment, you can receive Chinese television, Russian television, ESPN, the sports channel from America, CNN, the news channel from America, and a variety of Indonesian and other services off the satellite. And perhaps more than anywhere else in the world, except here in Europe, Asia will have in the next few years more international television than probably anywhere in the world.
Will Radio Australia play an important role in this development?
I think so, yes. I think that in recognising the inevitable changes in technology, Radio Australia will become Radio and Television Australia. And if we put up ABC Television, that's our domestic television service, already we've asked Radio Australia to supply their news material for an hourly news bulletin on the international television signal. So already we are asking Radio Australia to provide material for the television service. But that's recognising that Radio Australia is an international communicator first, and a shortwave radio broadcaster second. And as the technology changes and as people throughout the world have more access to television, I think the ABC, the Australian Broadcasting Corporation, and Radio Australia have got to move with the times.
I think there may have been quite a number of people in Radio Australia a bit apprehensive over the past couple of years with the closing down of the Japanese service and the French service, but you're saying there is a future then for Radio Australia's role?
Yes, but look, just as we've closed down the Japanese service, the reality is, in terms of consumer electronic equipment, the Japanese are probably the most developed in the world, and there is virtually no shortwave radio listenership in Japan. And it was a legacy of 50 years ago that we pretended to broadcast on shortwave into Japan. Very few people were listening. We should recognise that fewer people in the developed countries are listening to shortwave radio and more are watching television, and I think we have to make some degree of transition. That's not to say that shortwave doesn't have a very long life still in it. For example, Vietnam domestically still uses shortwave for radio broadcasts, and we provide a Vietnamese service, and I think we'll do for a very long time to come. Similarly in Indonesia, similarly in standard Chinese and in Cantonese, I think those audiences for Radio Australia run into tens of millions a day of people listening to Radio Australia, and I think that'll be the case for a long time to come. But it's not as if we're winding back shortwave radio. We're just recognising where the market exists. For example, in the next few months, we will introduce a Khmer news service on shortwave radio because the television in Cambodia is very limited, largely to the area of Phnom Penh. Most of the different factions in Cambodia would welcome Radio Australia providing a Khmer service on shortwave radio.
David Hill. We continue in Asia, but we're now back firmly on shortwave.
This is the Sri Lanka Broadcasting Corporation. We're now concluding our special weekly transmission to New York, Northeast USA on 15,425 kHz in the 19-metre band.
Well, Victor Gunatilika joins us on the line from Colombo, Sri Lanka now. Victor, SLBC was indeed testing to North America a while back. Have they had any response?
Well, not really, Jonathan, and they are looking for reception reports, especially on this 23:30 to midnight UTC Monday night transmissions beamed to Eastern North America. The frequency is 15425, and it's on a 300 kilowatt transmitter.
Now, you say Monday. That's Monday, presumably, as far as UTC is concerned.
Well, yeah, that's right. That would be Monday, of course, in North America. It's early Tuesday morning in Sri Lanka.
Okay, and what's the address to write to?
Deputy Director General Engineering, New External Broadcast, Sri Lanka Broadcasting Corporation, P.O. Box 574. That's P.O. Box 574. Colombo, Sri Lanka.
Now, I've seen reports, notably in the Far Eastern Economic Review, that India is worried that Iran has approached Sri Lanka with the intention of building a shortwave relay station.
Well, yes, Jonathan, we have also been following those reports, but it's impossible to get any comments from anybody in Colombo, either at the SLBC or in other quarters about this report. In fact, the local press did not report anything. The foreign minister of Iran, of course, visited Sri Lanka 2 months ago. Probably there was something in this report, especially keeping in mind that Iran, even during the time of the Shah's regime, was trying to get a relay station in Sri Lanka. And at that time, they were negotiating with the French radio, the ORTF, then to see whether they could have a joint relay station. But nothing came off from those negotiations then.
Do they really need a relay station? I mean, I know when I've been in Colombo and listened around the dial that Iran, especially on its 9022 kilohertz frequency, has been quite strong.
But when you look at Sri Lanka, how strategically located it is, especially when you look at the Islamic countries of Southeast Asia like Indonesia, Malaysia, and even Bangladesh, I think Iran should be able to get a very much stronger signal from Sri Lanka to those parts of Southeast Asia.
Thanks, Victor. More from him next week.
Some stations talk to the world. Radio Netherlands talks to people.
And that's where we end this nostalgic trip back into the Media Network audio archives from 1981 to October 2000. If you find all this stuff interesting, you might want to explore the Critical Distance website.
This is Media Network with Jonathan Marks,
where you can find more vintage audio shows, but also peruse recent video interviews I've made in the course of my travels around the world. Some of the videos actually follow up on points raised in the Media Network program. So zip over to www.jonathanmarks.com for more details. In the meantime, this is Jonathan Marks saying back soon. Bye for now.
I regret to inform you this recording is now officially over.